Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us, No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.
Wasn't that a lot to go through just to get a laugh at my expense?
Nah. Worth every second.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Dawson's Creek edition. Today's episode is Season 6, Episode 6, Living Dead Girl. And now here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara.
Hello, listeners. We want to tell you what is coming up in the club before we get into this episode. First of all, this Thursday, July 16th, we're going to bring you our latest My So-Called Life recap. This is going to be Season 1, Episode 2, Dancing in the Dark. Angela hits a new milestone in her bad girl era, and her parents take a dance class. Also, a very momentous haircut occurs. A lot is going on. You're not going to want to miss it.
No. Shows her ears more, and it's dropping on my brother's 20th wedding anniversary. Huh. And then the next day, dropping on Dave Sr. and David Hasselhoff's birthday. Friday, July 17th, it's Again With This, 296. Let's watch Scott Foley and Meredith Monroe in House. That is Season 1, Episode 12, Sports Medicine. My dad likes some sports. That is on Hulu. We'll link it in the show notes. We're getting close to 300 of these bad boys. If you're not in the club already, we really hope that you will join us again with this podcast.com/club.
Indeed. Let's get into this episode, starting with our C plot. Joey has an adventure in babysitting. We open this one at Hell's Kitchen, Halloween night. Joey is excitedly telling Eddie she made a deal with Hetson so that Eddie can come back to class, and then almost immediately realizes off Eddie's reaction that she should not have done that. Eddie asks what made her think he even wanted to come back. She says the trouble he took to attend made Joey think it meant something to him, but she is sorry. And when she turns around to escape this awkward exchange, she bumps straight into a tween girl who spits at her to watch where she's going. She is played by, hey, it's that Mika Burim, who was a thing for a while. This also means we can cover Blue Crush. So, yay. Thank you for showing up.
Can we?
We sure can.
And if we're also covering Quarterback Princess, it's going to be like a John Stockwell podcast.
Oh, that's right.
And I'm not totally mad about it. He used to be cute.
Joey asks how old this girl even is. She says it's none of Joey's business. She's just looking for someone with the unfortunate name of Joey. And then Hetson is right behind the girl to make introductions. Joey evidently got Eddie back into class by agreeing to babysit Hetson's daughter, Harley, on the incorrect assumption that she was 5 just because she is in the photo on Hetson's desk. Harley, so unfortunate, whines about Hetson blowing off their Halloween horror movie tradition to date some skank instead. Hetson says she's not the bad kind of skank and promises to make it up to Harley. And then, as you can see in the visual aids, literally runs away from his child to, like, escape this conversation.
Oh, my God.
Joey makes a sympathetic sucks face at Harley, who snaps at her and stomps off. So it's like she's known Joey all her life. When we rejoin them later, Harley is leaning over a table, dangerously asking Eddie if he has a girlfriend. They're more trouble than they're worth, he says. Harley thinks that sounds like a waste, and when he asks how old she is, she claims to have found age is but a number. Joey wraps up her shift and tries to get Harley out. She was going to take her trick-or-treating, but that's when she thought Harley was 5, so maybe they could see a horror movie. Harley says that sounds lame. She wants to stay there. Eddie does not help by winking at her. Joey doesn't think Hetson would want her spending the night at a college bar, but Harley says he wouldn't care. And based on what we've seen so far, I agree.
Yeah, believe Harley's. I don't think he gives a shit.
Yes. Joey draws that she could host a daytime talk show on Deadbeat Dad, so I guess instead of competing over whose is worse, they should go have fun. Harley plans to stay there until Hetson comes back. But when Eddie brings up a local haunted house he read about, Harley gets interested, as long as he's coming. Joey says he's working, but he's actually off in 5 minutes and has no plans. In that case, Joey invites him to join them. Harley is about it and flounces off. Joey tells Eddie she could have handled that, and he mocks that it sucks when someone butts into your business, doesn't it? And she just makes a fondly rueful face because they're at this point now already. Alas, though, no one's very impressed by the haunted house until a performer dressed as a mummy taps Joey on the shoulder and she screams in his face. Harley calls her a word we don't use anymore, and it was really too late for them to still be using it in 2002, honestly.
Yeah, I, like, recoiled.
Mm-hmm.
She's called a twerp in return, which I think we should bring twerp back.
Agree.
The other one. Ooh, no, no.
But the other one, yes, no. She wanders off. Harley does, that is. Eddie tells Joey to go easy on Harley. She's obviously got issues with her father. Don't we all? Joey replies, and then apologizes again about talking to Hetson about him. Eddie's the smartest person in the class, and she just hated to see all his potential go to waste. Eddie doesn't agree about potential or waste. He just likes to read. He doesn't know his life would be better if he went to college, and he doesn't need to be some rich kid's charity case. Joey chuckles at how little he knows about her. He says this all could have been avoided since he wasn't even going to come back to Hetson's class. Hetson is too cynical and arrogant, but you'll never guess why he changed his mind, you guys. Clip two.
You. You got under my skin. I found myself having these series of annoying conversations with you in my head, which must be a sign of something, so I kept coming back for more, which ultimately proved to be my undoing. Man, you are such a scaredy cat.
That's what they tell me. Do you let me go now?
You know what? I don't think so.
Oh, Eddie. Disappointed.
When they're being cute, I find them cute. I'm sorry. I know it's her and she's awful, but it's because of him.
Yeah, she is awful. It's not her fault. Part of it is also like the writing at this time can't control what we already know, which is that this is the last season and this is not Endgame.
Yep.
I don't mind them together, but it just seems to be taking a really long time.
Yes. But at this point, they kiss, but only for a second, because then Joey remembers she has to find Harley. When we rejoin them, Joey's getting increasingly hysterical about tracking down a girl who is, I'm going to say, at least 14 and probably could be babysitting other people's children herself.
Mm-hmm.
She yelps that it's Eddie's fault that she lost Harley because Eddie's kiss distracted her. Eddie turns it back on Joey since she's the one who kissed him first. But unfortunately, then we get this. Clip three.
Now, if you were a bratty teenage girl, where would you disappear off to?
Oh, listen, if I was a teenage girl, bratty or otherwise, I would never leave the house. I'd be too busy checking myself out.
Yuck. Don't be gross.
Yeah. Also, get on with it.
Also that. Eddie then swerves that all of this is actually Hetson's fault since he's the one who canceled his movie plans with Harley. Joey squeals that Eddie's a genius and throws her arms around him again before dragging him off with her. And then we rejoin Eddie outside Fright Night, directing a guy in a skeleton costume to the haunted house. When Joey drags Harley out, Harley immediately starts playing up to Eddie, who calls her young lady and says she gave them quite a scare. Harley says the night's almost over and then Joey can return to her miserable existence. Joey asks Eddie for a moment so she can tell Harley just because Hetson canceled their plans tonight, it doesn't mean he's a bad dad or that he doesn't love her. And Harley's like, I know, it just means he's a dick, which, okay, fine. You got
me. Fair.
She asks if Joey even likes him. Sometimes Harley can't imagine how anyone could. He's very abrasive, which, I mean, so is Joey. Consider who you're talking to. But anyway, clip four.
But he's also very... Every time I'm supposed to come see him, I trick myself into thinking that it's going to be different this time.
but it never is. It's always just different shades of the same.
Well.
Yeah. Why didn't this girl ever, she was like on the verge and then it never quite verged. Did we just already have a Kirsten Dunst? Is that why?
I mean, Kirsten Dunst had already aged out of being Kirsten Dunst at this point. This is, you know, she was starting to get into almost adult roles. This was around, I mean, maybe a couple of years after Virgin Suicides. But yeah, I don't know. And it's probably one of the situations where if we looked it up, it would be very depressing.
Yeah.
So I hope she is okay. And that's why.
Yes, me too. And doing what she wants to do.
Yes. Joey has nothing to say to Harley's assessment of Hetson, and Harley trudges off. Mika Burham's good performance aside, I don't know why we care about any of this. Like, this is so much work to get us to where they're taking Eddie and Joey.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, Hetson's a dick who sucks at dad custody weekends?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. What new information that moves the plot and me? Not really.
Hetson's a shitty dad who gave his daughter a stupid name? Interesting. Anyway, then Joey and Harley are back at Hell's Kitchen shooting pool when Hetson returns. His date was fine right up until the moment she said he had a toxic personality. When he asks, Joey tells him everything went great and Harley was a perfect angel. Harley asks him for a second and then tells Joey, clip five.
Sorry, I was such an Uber bitch.
Just in case we need that in the future. Mm-hmm. Not that okay. I'm ever sorry.
Me neither. I'm definitely not sorry when you are.
Joey tells Harley not to stop hoping things can be different with Hetson. She's too young to be so bitter. Harley starts to leave and then turns back to ask if she can give Joey some advice. And I was pretty sure it was going to be don't project your shit on people you just met. But in fact, it is that Eddie totally likes Joey. Harley hopes a guy like him looks at her like that someday. And then Eddie returns with a root beer float for Harley, and Joey has to tell him that he missed her. Eddie suggests the two of them split it so that it doesn't go to waste, like his potential. Joey asks what they're doing. She kisses him, he kisses her. In some states, that's considered dating. Eddie quickly says they're not, possibly because he's broke and doesn't want to get her hopes up for big, expensive nights out. Joey, however, agrees, if not as seriously. He adds that he's not going back to Hetson's class, and Joey says that's fine. She doesn't want to change who he is, and they go on clip six.
You know what, Joey? I don't know what's going on with us, but I kind of like it that way.
Me too.
No, she doesn't.
Well, undefined emotional entanglements were her favorite fucking thing with Dawson for many years, so maybe she does.
Yeah, I just don't think she would have been conscious that she was repeating that pattern.
Perhaps.
Also, the tongue is so fucking back in the scene. It's in the visual aids, like, even in like a wide two shot, it's so tonguey. Stop doing that. I am craving a root beer float, though. I have been since we prepped this episode.
Honestly, when I saw it, I was like, okay, change the root beer for Coke and I'm there.
Yeah. I live near a Stewart's. I might just have to do it.
Yeah, you should. We'll wait. Go get one and come back.
All right. Bye.
On to the B plot. Love goes to a Halloween party to die. Audrey seems like she could just be dressed for a Hell's Bells gig until she bellows for Sid. And Pacey comes out from somewhere in moderately committed Sid Vicious drag. You can see in the visual aids. Apparently, Audrey agrees with me regarding his commitment as she comments that leather pants would be more authentic. She's lucky he even went this far with it, Pacey says. She reminds him he promised not to be cranky tonight. He says he's not a costume party kind of guy. When Audrey says he loves putting on his monkey suit every day, he makes a warning noise and she backs down. She doesn't want to get into yet another tiff about their ever-widening ideological differences. When she goes to the bathroom for last touches on her Nancy Spungen look, Pacey sees an F psych exam with "What's going on with you? See me" on the cover with a little like zigzaggy line under it, which sort of undercuts like the warning message.
Yeah.
But when Audrey comes out and sees his look of alarm, he says it's nothing. And by the way, seeing Audrey in this hair, makeup and costume makes me sad. We missed our window for her to play Courtney Love in a Kurt and Courtney biopic. Like even a Lifetime original movie version could have worked in 2002. Oh, well. The other two apartment residents plus Jen are going to the same party, by the way, as in the A plot, but the B plot and A plot do not overlap at all, even though they're happening at the same party. which is crazy.
Yeah. Everyone's schedules must have just been deranged at this point. I can't think of any other explanation.
Nope. So Jack is dressed as a Lost Boys style vampire. He's telling Jen to call CJ. Jen is a non-specific goth girl with feathery wings. Don't really get it, but sure, I guess.
Okay, she looks cute.
She does. She says it's too late, and if she doesn't try to get together with CJ, there will be no hurt feelings or morning after pills later. Emma is, I'm going to say, Madonna meets Cyndi Lauper, like desperately seeking Susan era Madonna, but brunette with a fuchsia clip in, like pearl necklaces. It's hard to say. She just looks cute.
Yeah. No, it's fine.
She agrees with Jen. Jack says Jen just thinks CJ is too good for her, and she's wrong. Jen says CJ is probably doing good works right now anyway, which is annoying but charming. Also, she doesn't know CJ's number, so Jack tells her to call the helpline. He picks right up when she does, and after Jen determines that he remembers who she is, she asks plans for the night. When he's done, clip 7.
Well, if going back to my room and watching Halloween H2O on cable qualifies as plans, then yeah, I'm all booked up.
Jen awkwardly invites him to a party. CJ asks if it'll just be the two of them, and as Jack tries to stop her, she says she'll be going with her friends, and CJ is in. We next see them at the party. Jack asks Jen if she told CJ it was a costume party. She thinks so, but then Jack points, and we see CJ in just a regular-ass hoodie walking over to them with another guy. We're about to learn his name, David, and he's a soap guy, I guess?
Yep. Greg Rickert. He's been on, like, literally thousands of Days of Our Lives, I believe, and another soap, not Bold and Beautiful. Young and the Restless, I guess.
Okay.
I didn't know him by sight, but he looks very young here because he is. And why would either of them not assume that any party on October 31st is a costume party?
Yeah.
Just say you're yourself from 5 minutes ago like we all did in college, like a bunch of assholes. But like, obviously it's a costume party. Yeah. If you don't feel like doing it, that's different.
Yes. Stop at CVS on your way to the address you were given. Get a pair of like fucking dealy bobbers. I'm an alien. It's not hard.
Yes. Yes. It's really not. Or like put the sexy kitten costume on over your hoodie and just, I don't know, surrealism. Embrace it.
CJ says Jen could have told them it was a costume party. David pleasantly says he feels like a dork. After introductions, they head to the bar, Jen moaning to Jack that she's like flypaper to the homosexual community. Jack doesn't know why she would assume David is CJ's boyfriend. But even if he's not, she says, he's too standoffish. When Jen makes her intentions known, she wants them acknowledged and reciprocated. Jack says that they can split up and figure out their deal. And then Audrey and Pacey are arriving at the party separately. Audrey loves it immediately while Pacey feels old. She wants to dance, but Pacey describes what people are doing as cavorting. Clip 8.
Hey, when did you become such a dumb normal?
At the same time, you started failing tests.
What's that supposed to mean?
What's with the F, Audrey?
It's a letter grade, Pacey. It's typically given when a student fails to meet the requirements of an assignment.
Thanks, wise ass. I'm just asking if everything's okay.
I got it totally under control, baby.
Yeah, because, you know, in my experience, there's never just one F. Those things tend to come in bunches.
You know what? I have a really good idea. Let's not talk about this.
Okay, fine. Just letting you know that I'm worried, that's all.
You know what? It doesn't really seem like you are. It seems like you're too busy running around like Glengarry Glenn Loser to be worried about much of anything these days.
It's nice of you. Take a swing at me because I got to work for a living. That's great.
I don't mind that you have to work for a living, Pacey. I'm just saying don't lose yourself in it.
No. Just break up, please. I mean, I know this is what we're doing, but like, this is actually a little too actual.
Yeah.
As they say in my so-called life, that it's like, oh, these were like actual fights with my boyfriends at that age.
But at the same time, like, it seems too surface level too. Like, I don't know why she wouldn't say, didn't you barely graduate high school? Like, who are you to tell me anything, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. I mean, there is this weird, like, they don't know as much about each other as we know about either of them.
Right.
Thing happening that shouldn't be happening.
I agree. Pacey bleats that he's just trying to find out what's going on, and Audrey tells him some of the truth. Clip 9.
I haven't really been going to class much this semester, Pacey. Why is that, you might ask? Because I've been kind of depressed. Hey, you see, I have this boyfriend, and I thought everything was going great, but apparently it's not. Apparently he cares about his job more than he cares about me, and I know he would probably say that wasn't true and that I'm just being some hysterical drama queen, but I suppose if it wasn't true, he'd pretty much know everything that was going on in my life, wouldn't he, Pacey?
Well, you're also not telling him shit, so there's only so much he can do in the 3 hours a day that he's not studying, if that.
Yeah, and you're also acting like an out of character, like you're just acting out of character. Mm-hmm. I don't think this is anyone's fault, but it's like,
yeah,
you should have broken up at home.
Yeah. Alas. They don't break up yet. That's when Emma materializes near them and compliments their costumes, only for the two of them to head off in different directions. When we next see Audrey, she's moping through an abandoned area of the party and then climbing into a prop coffin and pulling the door closed on herself when she hears a noise. It is, in fact, Pacey, sort of looking for her, but soon parking his ass on a crypt, which is where Emma finds him and asks if he's okay. Sure, he says, if your idea of okay is, insert poorly aged self-harm joke here. Emma guesses he and Audrey had a fight and offers a bit of a chat, even though, as he says, that isn't really their thing, but he spills. Clip 10.
I used to think that Audrey and I were the perfect fit, and we were, because for the first time in any of my relationships, we were on equal footing, and there was no mind games, no high drama, no angst. It was just fun.
Sounds good. In theory, it's a bit difficult to sustain that sort of thing.
That's what I'm finding out.
Yeah.
And it's making me second guess myself. Because I'm not really sure if the reason I'm checking out is because I just can't handle the rough spots, or if it's because I just don't love her anymore. Or really, for that matter, if I ever truly loved her.
Yeah, I'm afraid only you can answer that one.
And to be perfectly honest, I don't really want to find out tonight. So what do you say you and I go and rejoin the party?
Okay.
Thanks for listening, though.
It's okay. But, you know, just because we have one proper conversation, don't think you can cry on my shoulder anytime you like.
They're gonna fuck.
This was the clip that made me have to look up Megan Gray and determine that, no, she is not English. Her English accent is bad because she is from Sacramento.
No. Not Sacramento on Derby?
Okay. Alas, no.
Sacramento on Thames?
Unlike Hal Ozen, who I think is really English, she is not.
Mm.
In no way could Audrey make out that quiet conversation inside a prop coffin several feet away with loud music surrounding them. But based on her expression, when she pushes the lid open, she heard all of that. It's
heard enough. Yeah.
Incredibly superhuman hearing for anyone, but especially for television, because normally if they were just standing in at opposite ends of a room, we're supposed to think people can't hear each other.
Mm-hmm.
Over to Jen, sitting next to David in a couple of prop electric chairs and asking how long he and CJ have been together. David's like, together? So Jen asks how long he and CJ have known each other. About a year since they met at the stand, he says. Jen kind of rudely snorts that he's one of those, and David confirms that he is just another gay kid trying to remake the world in his own image. She should come by sometime. CJ already gave her the hard sell, and it's not really her thing, she says. Clip 11.
So you're the Jenny he's always talking about.
She talks about me?
All the time. He wants you so bad.
Really?
Yeah. He thinks you'd make a great counselor.
Oh. For a second, I thought that you meant that he wanted me. But of course not. He's gay. Why would he want me that way?
Who, CJ?
Yeah.
CJ's not gay.
He's not?
Wasn't this person a New Yorker?
Jen? Yes.
Like, I don't know. Hasn't she, in theory, been living near Provincetown for however long? Like, I don't understand this writing of, like, nobody on the show having gaydar. The misunderstandings aren't funny. Jen just being this complete babe in the woods about interpreting interpersonal signals is tiring. And it seems like Michelle Williams is tired of playing it also, and I don't blame her. They don't know what to do with her.
Right. I mean, I think this is just Jen, like, flailing for any reason why this guy would not be interested in her when she thinks he should be. Showing up with another guy sort of confirms, like, oh, okay, that explains it. He's gay. That's why he brought this guy so that I would see and know.
Yeah, roadblock either way. Yeah, right. I see.
Smash cut to CJ telling Jack the same thing, that he is not gay, making sure to clarify he's not offended. Jack says there's someone who will be very happy to hear that. Clip 12.
Who? Lil Dance.
Yeah. Lil Dance. Indeed. Yeah,
Lil Dance. I mean, is this like a PSA plot about neurodivergent flirting? Because otherwise, I don't really think I understand the fuck is going on. But anyway.
Yeah.
Like, he's just not that into you is not a teen soap plot point.
Right. Jack explains he means Jen. CJ diplomatically says, that's nice to hear. Jack intuits that CJ is not interested, and CJ says, Jen is cool and could be an asset to the stand, but he's not really looking for that right now. And even if he were, she's not his type. Which, like, tell that to the CJ from the party a couple of weeks ago, because when he was in the hall after they dropped off Audrey, he was definitely giving signals, I felt.
Mm-hmm.
Outside the party later, Jen flirts to CJ that they barely got any time together. He flirts back that she can always call the hotline. Jen claims she's been reconsidering her stance on the stand, and CJ says they would love to have her if she's doing it for the right reasons. He could make this easier on her by just going out with her, she says, and he gives her a very interested look. Like, if he's trying to put her off, he is not doing it well.
Mm-mm.
Then we cut back 30 yards as Jack, watching with David, explains why this is making him sad. Clip 13.
Trust me, she's better off.
What do you mean?
That's a long story.
Okay, I was not watching at this point, so nobody tell me if you're listening and you remember. My best guess is she was right and he is religious. And he's like, I'm not having sex now until after I'm married.
I think that's probably the most logical. I would love it to be something more like, not gothic, but broke, I guess. He's actually married. Mm-hmm. He's a single father. But I think you're probably right.
I hope we find out soon. For now, Jack asks if David might want to tell it to him over coffee sometime, and David's up for it. Love that for them. Jen and CJ join them, and when everyone splits up, Jack kindly asks Jen how it went. She gushes that CJ is playing a little hard to get, but he'll be hers, and Jack just says they should get out of there instead of telling her what he knows. Bad friend! What was the point of splitting up and getting the lay of the land if you're not going to tell her what you found out? Bad friend.
Yeah.
Later still, Pacey finds Audrey outside the warehouse sitting on the hood of his car. She does not bother dragging shit out. Clip 14.
I think we should break up, Pacey.
What? Let's just go home and sleep on it. We can talk about it in the morning.
No. This is what I want.
This is not the way I wanted for this to happen.
Have you noticed he does that? Joshua Jackson will, like, put a four in a line of dialogue that doesn't need one. Like, it's just, this is not how I wanted this to happen. Not for this to happen. Keep an ear out.
Also, I'm not sure this isn't what he wanted to happen, because she does call him out pretty directly on this thing that boys this age do, which is just be unsatisfactory until she dumps you, and then it doesn't have to be your fault.
Anyway, there is more. As you said, Sarah, she yells at him to shut up. He's getting off easy and he knows it. Clip 15.
I'm not going to let you put up some false protest so that you can feel better about yourself. I am ending it now. That's how I know that it's over. You didn't say a word, Pacey. Not a word, because you don't have the energy to fight it, and I deserve better than that.
You're right, you do. You deserve way better than that.
Go ahead, PC, why don't you follow the script? You know, say all of the things that you're supposed to say to me. Do you got anything else? How many empty words is it going to take for you to be able to sleep easy tonight?
What do you want from me, Audrey? You know that's not how it is, but the negativity gets to me too, okay? So I agree with you.
Don't you dare try to make yourself feel noble, Pacey. You are not some knight in shining armor. You are just a guy who has grown tired of screwing the same girl and you feel guilty about it. You think that sucks? What Why don't you try being the one who has to wonder why all the people that she loves don't love her back?
Oh, come on.
Oh. Slap! I mean, that was rough to watch, but fucking finally.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us, No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.
Finally, our A plot, Dawson sees an old Hollywood ghost. The lava lamp and kiss poster let us know we're on the set of Todd's movie even before Natasha in costume enters kissing her co-star. When they get on the bed with shoes on, of course, he gets her enthusiastic consent before pulling up her t-shirt and going for her bra. The artist, formerly known as the Strangler, is just a general killer, I guess, because he comes out of the closet with a highly polished axe. But when he pulls it back to strike, a studio light falls. Clip 16.
Cut! Excuse me, Andrew. Must be my trick here. Did you just yell cut? Yelling cut is one of the few bright spots in an otherwise bleak existence, and I will not allow some hack stuntman to deny me the pleasure. You do not break character until I yell cut. Do you understand me?
Yeah.
Good. That was fun. Sometimes I forget how much I like yelling at people.
Yeah.
Poor Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a tough job. Todd adds that this is what he gets for shooting on a haunted soundstage the day before Halloween. Dawson hasn't heard anything about the death of Melanie Ray, but when Todd asks, Natasha confirms she has, as she starts a neck and shoulder massage on Todd. He tells the story. In the 50s, Melanie Ray was starring in a movie called Kiss the Girls and Make Them Die, opposite her husband, Nick March. Clip 17.
When Nick found out about the affair, he went friggin' ballistic. Now, doing this scene where the two characters had to get in a fight, he strangled her to death.
That sucks.
mean... yeah?
Yeah. It's so flat, I thought it was going to turn into like when Pacey called Rich out on his story about his girlfriend that was fake. Like, I thought it was going to be like, that sucks that you think you could trick me with that or something.
Uh-huh.
That sucks. You'll have to do better than that, etc. But no, that's just really all Dawson has to say about, as far as he knows, a woman's death. Because as we learn when Natasha's called away, Dawson's more concerned about whether a different movie starlet is having an affair with her director. Clip 18.
Leary, my boy, I learned a long time ago not to screw around with my leading ladies. That's what extras are for. But if I was going to unlearn that particular lesson, the lovely Natasha would be the one to do it with.
Okay. Established, mm-hmm. I guess. The next day, which is Halloween, Dawson joins Todd and an editor in the editing bay and exposits that the art department has transformed Stage 7 for a Halloween party. Clip 19.
I love Halloween. My favorite holiday. Always has been.
Yeah, mine too. Actually, I'm kind of famous for playing these elaborate pranks on my friends back home.
Good for you, Gilligan.
I don't quite understand, but I also don't care. That was funny.
Mm-hmm. When Todd asks, Dawson promises that Todd's costume will make him look like a stud. If he can't get laid in it, Dawson has some extras lined up. Everyone, including the editor, laughs because sexually harassing the least powerful women on a film set is hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
They are watching the Natasha and makeout scene from the day before, Todd joking that Natasha's so hot he might need the other two to leave so he can be alone with himself. When Dawson doesn't laugh, Todd catches up the new viewers by saying Dawson has no right to be territorial about her since he is the one who dumped her for his prom date. Dawson whines that Joey wasn't his prom date and then I guess remembers he did guilt her into going to their junior unprom. Not that he puts it that way, but that did happen. And that's when there's a flash in the footage. It takes forever, but the editor finally stops it on a black and white frame of a woman standing beside a Melanie Ray costume test sign. Todd asks if this is one of Dawson's hilarious Halloween pranks, since the woman they're all looking at in their footage is the deceased who supposedly haunts the soundstage. And I don't know how he can make that determination when this could just as easily be a mannequin in a bad wig, giant sunglasses, and a black vinyl trench coat. But okay, let's pretend that's a lady.
Yeah. Also, not reading 50s at all, but it won't matter. Let's just go with it.
Yep. Then we're at the fancy Halloween party before it's actually started. Dawson, I guess being a man in black, is walking through the styrofoam goblins and tombstones and swirling dry ice vapors alone. He hears a spooky whisper that sounds like his name and then sees a figure disappear around a corner ahead of him. She's in a bad wig, giant sunglasses, and black vinyl trench coat. Or is she? Because when he follows, there's no one there, and he stares into the commercial break with a swinging skeleton chandelier behind him that you can see in the visual aids. After said commercials, the party's in full swing. A knockoff Marilyn Manson playing a song about Frankenstein. Great reminder of where the culture was, say. Dawson finds Todd chatting up two Alices in Wonderland, and we see the costume Dawson promised would look him like a stud is Catholic priest. Yikes. Dawson has gotten Todd to dismiss his targets. He tells him about seeing Melanie. Todd doesn't believe him, saying he probably saw someone in a Melanie costume, but Dawson says it was before anyone got there. Todd tells him he's working too hard to relax some bye-bye pain juice because he's a Hollywood sicko. But then Dawson's attention is drawn by Natasha making a grand entrance dressed more or less as Britney Spears in the Hit Me Baby One More Time video, minus the pink fuzzy hair elastics on her pigtails, but most definitely suggestively sucking a lollipop. You can see this in the visual aids too, because I made a GIF. Even the gentlemanly Dawson can't help sneaking a peek at her rack, or perhaps that's James Van Der Beek. I don't want to speak ill of the dead, but they're nice
boobs. It was me. She looks great.
She does. When Todd asks Natasha to dance, she accepts and gives him her lollipop, which is not a euphemism at this time. Later, Dawson's talking to a blonde in a sexy red devil costume when he glances up and sees what seems to be Melanie on a catwalk. He stops short of asking the sexy devil if she can also see Melanie, instead running up alone to try to find her. And of course, Melanie continues to elude him, or maybe not exist. But when Dawson gets to the highest tier, he looks down and sees Natasha take Todd to the bedroom set and sit close on the bed with him. Dawson runs down the stairs, pauses for just a second before storming in and confronting them, but when he gets there, tons of other people are also in the room. Todd and Natasha are on the bed, but innocently chatting and confused by his nostrilly intensity. He steps back out to the fake hallway where he gets a phone call, and we smash cut to the editing bay where the editor shows Dawson more mysterious cutaways in the new footage from the lab. This time, Todd's footage glitches to the entire scene of Melanie's husband killing her on camera before getting hauled off by crew guys. And Dawson manages not to say, "That sucks," this time. Sometime later, Natasha finds Dawson in the crowd. He compliments her on how great she looks, and after just a little chit-chat, he asks if she knows why Melanie slept with her director, cueing the part of the conversation where they're subtextually talking about themselves. Natasha suggests that Melanie fell in love with the director or wanted someone to pay attention to her. Dawson says Melanie had someone, her husband. Natasha counters that not all relationships are perfect. Maybe her husband had a shot and blew it. When Dawson counters that maybe Melanie didn't give him enough of a chance, Natasha comes out and says if he is asking if she's sleeping with Todd, it's none of his business. Dawson says it's not why he's asking, and she laughs that he's very obvious and also has no right to be jealous. He pretends he isn't, and she doesn't buy it and wanders off. And when we see him next, he's once again wandering through the party, scanning the crowd for Melanie, and, what do you know, spotting her again. Once again, he follows, she eludes. Eventually, he sees her go into the bedroom set, and once again, he waits a moment before letting himself in. But this time, Todd and Natasha are on the bed, fooling around. Todd feebly says, "This isn't what it looks like." Clip 20.
"You guys aren't screwing behind my back."
"No, we are. But look at her, do you know what I mean? She's very persuasive."
"Shut up.
You can't tell me to shut up.
What are you going to do, fire me? You tried that before. It doesn't take. Listen, Natasha, I'm really sorry that I hurt you. I mean, that was the last thing that I wanted to have happen, believe me. I got involved in the middle of an incredibly complicated situation, and I made a choice without thinking, and it was a wrong choice, which is what I don't think I've really been able to communicate to you, which is I like you. I keep on saying that I'm not jealous, but I am. I'm very jealous. The thought of some other guy touching you, especially him. I mean, he's Todd.
Larry, I'm not averse to giving this whole firing thing another go, you know.
Too late. I quit.
He leaves and come back.
Good luck with the rest of the movie. I'm out of here.
I giggled. I don't know. I thought that was sort of cute.
I did too. He makes a series of very funny faces in this sequence where it's just like he's impotently wounded. You can see them in the visual aids. I did a 4-pack of them, which felt important to capture.
Yeah.
After the commercial, Melanie's on the move again. Dawson spots her back on the catwalk and gives chase, but this time he actually catches up to her and she rocks right towards him and rips off her wig, and it's Natasha, because this has all been a Halloween prank on Dawson, and Todd is behind Natasha taping his reaction. She couldn't get there that fast, and there also needed to be a reveal that there was a second Melanie to sell the illusion.
Yeah.
Especially since that's like the big twist of Scream, that it would have been a cute homage for them to have thrown in here for Kevin Williamson reasons, but, you know, fine. I also guess Dawson had previously bored Natasha and or Todd with tales of his Halloween pranksmanship before this episode's events, because this one kicked off before we see him tell Todd that he has a reputation for doing pranks.
Mm-hmm. So why did we see that? Yeah.
Anyway, Natasha and Todd are not actually sleeping together. She says Todd's too old and has banged too many extras, and he says he's not into his assistant's sloppy seconds, so convincingly, they each insult the other. Got it. Before heading out to have Danny cut the prank footage together, Todd makes sure Dawson was not serious about quitting, since Todd needs help with his shot list tonight after a loud drunken party. Great idea. But Dawson just smiles his confirmation and then laughs at himself as they go. And I guess this was all worth it for the sake of Dawson admitting he still likes Natasha. To wit, Dawson then is back on the bedroom set when she finds him and asks if he's still mad. He was never mad at her. He was just insanely jealous. She finishes. Clip 21.
I don't think I realized how much I actually wanted to be with you until I thought you were sleeping with Todd.
Say it again.
Not that I was jealous.
No, that you like me.
I like you, Natasha. I really like you.
Good, because I like you too. A lot of people walk in and out of my life, Dawson, and you might not believe what I'm about to say because I'm an actor and I lie for a living. But you're one of the only people I ever really wanted to stick around.
I don't know what to believe. I love my life. I wake up most mornings pinching myself that I get to take even a small part in all of this, but I can't help but feel like it's all an illusion. You know, I mean, it's like it's all just one moment away from disappearing forever.
What does that have to do with what she said?
What the hell? Yeah.
Okay. But I guess it's because it tees up this. Clip 22.
It's because it is. For all I know, this could be my last job. Yeah. So I'm going to enjoy the experience while it lasts. Hug everybody now because they might not be here tomorrow. And take the experience with me. And if meeting you is all I get out of this one, well, that might just be enough for me.
Expect better, but they have really good chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
I think these actors. And something about the line, like, you know, hug people because you don't know if they'll be there tomorrow after Vanderbeek passed earlier this year. Just, I don't know. It was like, oh, mm-hmm. I hope this is all part of season 6. Putting the character on a good path because he's come a long way. He's still annoying, but they all are.
I agree. She can think that doing the movie is probably worth doing the movie more so than meeting Dawson, but whatever, she has to tell herself, I suppose. They kiss, and he says he missed her. She always wanted him back. He just had to pay for his sins. But they're just about even now. He walks her toward the bed, and they repeat the dialogue from the scene we saw in the cold open, which is this, clip 23.
Ellen, are you sure about this?
As sure as I've ever been about anything in my entire life.
Groovy.
That was cute. Sure. They're cute, yes.
I mean, look, this show has worn me down to a nub. But we're almost done.
I get it.
Let me have this nice thing. They seem cute. Good luck.
Yes. But yet again, we're short because then we watch the killer's feet trudge into the room and show the shiny axe. And the camera flashes to the green masked face. The killer raises the axe and blackout to the credits, which are in the Treehouse of Horror treatment from The Simpsons. Because sure, why not? Andrew, I understand their wish, but please don't kill the lead. We need him next week. Sadly.
Yeah.
Let's close up by naming our episode MVP. On this, I'm going to say James Vanderbeek. He did some nice acting in this episode.
He did. I will take Todd and Natasha as a pair. That was pretty funny. And Todd is really has really grown on me and looked sort of cute. I mean, I know priest collar, but I don't know. He's cute.
Yes. Fair enough. I agree. Least valuable player. Hetson? He doesn't know Joey's qualified to babysit.
Yeah. When you're told that she can babysit, but you have to bring your kid to a bar. Like, what if the kid had been five? So yeah, Hetson for me too. Fuck that guy. Next time on Again With This, Audrey tries to drown her sorrows, but in the words of the great philosopher Shibuzi, they learned to swim. While CJ sends Jen mixed signals, Joey continues yanking Eddie's pigtails, and Pacey... Finance. Who cares? Our visual aids will never run out of ideas like the show has. Thank God, because we do them anyway for every episode of the Again With This podcast. You can find those along with the full archive of the episodes themselves on our website, againwiththispodcast.com. I'm Long Story Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Blue Sky at Sarah D. Bunting. Our co-host is Coffin Eavesdropper Tari Ariano, and she's on Blue Sky at Tari Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, is all booked up. Talk to you next time.
Groovy.
Ooh.
Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us, No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.